Going to miss something. Because this is part two of this morning. This morning we talked about John chapter 8. We looked at the leadership of the Jews. And how even though Jesus was really popular among some of them, they still couldn't accept it. Because they couldn't accept who he was and what the implications of that were. And that's why I call them fans, not followers. Tonight we're going to look at a follower. Everybody open your Bibles to John chapter 9. Yes, it is that simple, just the next chapter. John chapter 9. I love this chapter. It's one of my favorite chapters. As a matter of fact, I think, in my opinion, in the Gospel of John as a whole, the most important chapters in the book are 7, 8, 9, and 10. Because they're the meat of the text. They're where these chapters, 7, 8, 9, and 10, are the chapters where Jesus proves both in word and in deed who the Gospel of John says he is, the very beginning and the very end. So, without further ado, because of the entire sermon this morning, we've already set the context, so we don't need to set the context tonight. So we're just going to get right into the meat of chapter 9 straight away. There we go. So, this morning, Jesus is talking in the temple, right? And he's just gotten done saying, I am God. And this is when the crowd picks up stones and they want to stone him, but he hides himself because it's not yet his time to die. And he leaves. And here he is walking out with his disciples, those few who around him are his true followers, who are truly his disciples, who abide in his word, and whose word he has set them free, according to our scripture reading from this morning, John chapter 8, verses 31 and 32. So here he is with this core group of people who actually do accept him for who he is as much as they're able to right now. And so they're walking, and they're leaving the temple. And as they walk out of the gates to go out to the road to the rest of the city, right there at the gates, there's a man who's a beggar. And he's a beggar because he's blind. And everybody knows him. He's been blind from birth. Everybody knows that about him, too. Now, sometimes we don't really fully appreciate the situation. Because, first of all, let's be honest, here in America, we've never seen someone who's really, very few of us, have seen someone here in America who's really, 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 really poor and penniless. Lalo has. Go to Latino America, you see it all over the place. I saw it in the Philippines. The Philippines was the first time I saw someone who was really poor. And one of the interesting things, I'm sure Lalo can point this out about San Salvador or some of the other places he's been, maybe Habana, I assume, has a lot of these. Here's the thing. When you're in a place where there are really actually people who have no other recourse but to beg, they have their beat. They have their corner. And it's their corner. And everybody knows that's their corner. Every day when I was downtown in Tuguegarao City, every day I go outside, if I was going downtown, I would know that if I was on a certain corner, there was going to be a guy. And I would occasionally give him something. And there's going to be a guy who had no legs, born without legs. He had no legs. So he sort of got around on his hands. And he's a beggar. And that's all he can do. Because he can't work. And the thing is, everybody knows, when I preach this sermon in the Philippines, there in Tuguegarao City, I say, you know that guy down on the corner? On this corner, on these streets, like, yeah, that guy with no legs. Everybody knows. So this is not a random faceless person. Everybody knows this guy's face. Everybody knows this guy's voice. Everybody knows this guy's scenario. Everybody knows this guy was born blind. And his spot was outside the gates of the temple. His spot. Everybody knew it, because that's how it is. in situations like this. I guarantee you this. And so this is when his disciples, the disciples of Jesus, turn around and ask one of the stupidest questions they've ever asked. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Just when I thought we were getting somewhere with you guys. They got to open their mouths and ask this. Because first of all, do children bear the consequences of their parents' sins? They don't bear the guilt, but sometimes they have to suffer consequences. But this question is just so far off base. Jesus turns around to his disciples and he says, hold on a minute. Seriously? You're going to ask me that? After what I just said, you're going to ask me that? I'll prove something to you. I'll show you something. It wasn't because of sin. His parents didn't sin. He didn't sin. It just happened. It just happened. And it brings to mind Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 11. The race is not to the swift. Success is not always to the powerful. Time and chance conquer all. But he also says something else. He makes a point. He says, do you really believe what I said in there? Do you really believe that I am? Because if you do, one of the things that you need to accept is the possibility that I might have caused him to be born blind his entire life and to suffer through blindness his entire life just so I could prove this point to you right now. It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. And we must work the works of him who sent me while in his day. Because night is coming when no one can work. And as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Back to chapter 8. Remember, I'm God. I'm going to show you something. And so, he gets some dirt, spits on it. Jesus was weird, man. He makes some mud in his hands with the spit and the dirt. And he takes it and he puts it on this guy's eyelids. Now what he does then, he says, you go and you wash in the pool of Siloam. Why did he say that? Why the pool of Siloam? What was it about this pool that made it special? Nothing. Everything. Because Jesus was teaching everybody one thing. And if you've been in our Bible class this morning, and if you've been paying attention to what Abraham needed to learn and what he eventually ended up learning, Jesus is teaching the same lesson. Because it's a lesson that people have the most problems with. Trust God. Or in the words of Jesus, trust me. Here's why it was nothing. Because it's just a bunch of water. Okay? Doesn't matter. Here's why it was everything. And here's why this lesson is so important. The blind man is sitting outside the gates of the temple. Now that is on Temple Mount, which topographically speaking is the absolute highest point in the old city of Jerusalem. He's all the way up at the top. The Pool of Siloam is all the way down at the bottom and is the lowest point of elevation in the entire city. So here you got this blind man, can't see nothing, stumbling around, asking the way, because he knows his spot in the temple and he knows how to get to that. But I wonder if he'd ever been to that pool, and what reason would he ever have had to go to that pool. So here he is stumbling around. I got to hold on to the pulpit to make sure I don't fall off. Because that's probably what he did. stumbling around, asking people for directions. How do I get here? Falling down. Getting hit. Getting tripped. People telling him, watch where you're going. But he can't because he's blind. Doing all kinds of things. Telling him, get out of the way. They're busy. They got places to be. You're impeding traffic. But this blind man perseveres. He keeps going. And he keeps going. And he keeps going. And I wonder, well, I think I have a pretty good reason why. You ever met anybody who's blind, who's been blind for a long time? Maybe born blind or been blind for decades? What's one thing that stands out about people who are blind? They pay more attention to their other senses, don't they? Because most of us depend so heavily on our eyesight that we hear and we smell and we taste just as sharply as a blind person. Their senses aren't better than ours. They just pay more attention because we pay so much attention to what we see. Think about that. It'll come out later. So this blind guy is stumbling, tripping, falling, getting bruised, getting scraped. And finally, he gets to this place that everybody's telling him is the pool of Siloam. And so he edges up and he gets his hands down in the water and he washes his face off. And he opens his eyes. And there's everybody. And I wonder how long he just sat there. Because if anybody ever had a reason to start rubbernecking, it was that guy. Because he did not know what the color blue looked like. Until now. He did not know what his parents looked like. Until now. He heard everybody describe how beautiful and how wonderful the temple was. And he didn't know what it looked like. And as he leaves that pool and he starts wandering around the rest of the city, going back to the temple, for a moment, as he turns a corner, bam, flash of light. And he, I'm blind again. And then his eyes adjust. And he finally figures out it's the sun reflecting off the brilliant golden dome of the temple. And he sees it in all of its glory and splendor. And so this last part of verse 7. So he went and washed and he came back seeing. Kind of glosses over a lot of stuff, doesn't it? When you think about what he must have gone through, what must have been going on in his mind? There's a lot more than just going and washing and coming back seeing. So here he is going up to the temple, grabbing people, asking them, do you know where this guy was who put this mud on my eyes and told me to wash? And he's looking them in the eye. Think about this. That was his spot. He was the blind beggar, and he's looking people in the eye. Where is this guy? Where is this guy? Where's the guy who told me to go wash the mud off my eyes? I want to see him. I want to talk to him. And everybody, verse 8 tells us, everybody who had seen him before, yo, that's the blind dude. What in the world is he doing talking and looking at people like he sees us? Because it's... He's not stumbling around anymore. It looks like he sees us. What's he doing? And some people, and that's the blind dude. No, can't be him. He's blind. That guy's not blind. Can't be him. But he kept saying, I am that man. So they asked him, how were your eyes opened? here's the thing. Verse 11. He knew who this guy was. He knew. Because he used to be blind. Because he paid attention to his ears. And if Jesus is close enough for this to be the closest gate to his exit, do you think the blind man might have heard what Jesus had to say in chapter 8? I think so. Probably. Jesus made a custom of teaching in the temple. Do you think this blind man recognized his voice? Absolutely. And so when Jesus says to him all these things, and he gives this speech, and then he goes out, and his disciples ask this stupid, idiotic question, and he gives another answer, which addresses their stupidity. And he does this, and this guy can see, do you think maybe he might start to believe what Jesus said in chapter 8? Absolutely. Because he asked, the man named Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and I washed and I received my sight. And so they asked him, where is he? Who do you think I've been looking for? That's another stupid question. I'm trying to find him. So they bring this man to the Pharisees. And guess what? It's a Sabbath. Oh no! Can't do that. Can't heal a man on the Sabbath. That's work. I guarantee you, for the man to walk down to the pool, that was work. But it wasn't the kind of work that was forbidden on the Sabbath. And so the Pharisees asked him again how he received his sight. So he tells them, well, he put mud on my eyes, I washed and I see. And so some of the Pharisees, they say, well, he's not from God because he does things on the Sabbath. You can't do anything on the Sabbath. Well, what are they doing? They're doing something. They're holding a judicial proceeding. That's work. My, how grimy and sooty your rear end says. Your rear end says the pot to the kettle. And so, others of them say, well, how can a man who is so obviously a sinner do such signs? So they start arguing. And there are lines that are drawn. And so they say again, what do you say about him? Since it was your eyes that he opened. What do you think? And he starts off saying, well, he's obviously a prophet. Obviously. At the very least, he's a prophet. Now, is this blind man right? Yeah. Jesus isn't just a prophet, he is the prophet. So the Jews, the leadership again, the Jews, oh, this can't be right. He must not have been born blind. Bring his parents here. So his parents come, they say, well, yeah, that's our boy. Yeah, he was born blind. Everybody knows. Go ask him. Well, then how can he now see? I don't know. Don't ask me. He's a grown man. He's grown. You ask him. I don't know. But the scripture tells us, in verse 22, his parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess that Jesus was the Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. He was to be excommunicated, to be cast out of the community of Israel, treated as if he were an unclean heathen. Jesus, and worship him. And he says, no, don't worship me. Why in the world does he say that? Because he's God. He is absolutely deserving of worship. Because they don't understand. Because their hearts and their minds aren't prepared for who and what he is. And if they worshipped him the way their hearts and their minds were, it might have been idolatry. Because they might have been worshipping the man, not the deity. But this guy, Jesus, accepts his worship.
He accepts it as his due. Because he knows that the ex-blind man knows. And that he's a follower and not just a fan. And then Jesus turns around, and this is where he says what Leonard read tonight. For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may become blind. And once again, just like all of chapter 8, is he talking about the physical. No. Not talking about the physical at all. And then so the Pharisees, who were near, and they heard these things, they piped up, well, are you saying that we're blind too? His response is, if you were blind, you would have no guilt. But here's the thing, you said we see. So your guilt remains. You are making yourself out to be God's children. But you don't accept me for who I am. So the guilt remains. They blinded themselves to the truth about Christ. Because at best they were fans and not followers. That's why I love this blind guy so much. Because he heard what Jesus said. He experienced what Jesus did. And then he decided he was going to give his life to the Christ. And that's what it means to be a follower and not a fan. And if you haven't made that decision, we encourage you to make it tonight, to be baptized into Christ, to declare yourself a follower. And if you'd like to do that, or if there's any prayer you would like for us to offer on your behalf, please come forward and let us know what it is as we stand and sing song number 710.